Mr. Cheeseman, reel 29. You were going across the desert to Mirza Brega, and you mentioned the fact that you had left quite a lot of tanks broken down or what have you behind you. What date are we talking about here?
Now then, you've got that campaign. Yes, well, the best thing I can tell you is really find out when Rommel came into the picture, and that's when we came into the picture. Now, I don't think there's very many many history books record that the 5th Battalion was in that group, simply because as a battalion we weren't. There was 67% of our tanks left across the Cyrenaica and Cyrenaica desert, leaving about 37. Well, actually, the Royal Armoured Corps history. The first time that a cavalry regiment, or the remnants of a cavalry regiment, the remnants of a Royal Tank regiment, joined together and fought with 36 of course, we were against the master, the Desert Fox. And quite frankly, I have a very, very vague picture of what actually happened there, which I think is another way of saying that we were absolutely cut to shreds. And I remember my memory sort of sharpens up a little bit, where we had a section of, let's count them, there was the battalion ambulance, there was the headquarters squadron, Sergeant Major with his 500 weight truck, there was a petrol wagon, there was an ammunition wagon, that's right, five, and we, the headquarters maintenance, workshop maintenance wagon, five vehicles. Couldn't be much more than about probably 15, if that, personnel.
Just before we go on, you can't remember the cavalry unit you joined up with?
I'm afraid I don't know. As a matter of fact, it wasn't drummed in my mind that I was in the 5th Battalion. I couldn't have told you. It was such a, it was really a melting point as well. Anyway, my clear memory begins going north on a tarmac road, so that's quite obviously the coast road leading north, northwards, so was behind us. We're going towards Benghazi, and we hadn't been long on that road when we were strapped. Now, here again, that dreadful, horrible, all-consuming fear filled me, really did. But and I sort of remembered the last time that was in France, and where I ran away. I know it was in the lorry, I was told to get there, but I really ran away without looking to see whether my sergeant was alive or dead. It's even today, that rattles, Anyway, on our lorry at the time, we had the quartermaster mechanist, one of his plus one, of the fitters.
You remember his name?
I don't, I'm afraid not. My sergeant, I don't know his name. In fact, I know very little name of that. I think my name was Cheeseman. He was aircraft spotting, as it were. He banged on the roof, because with my engine going, you can't hear aircraft. He banged on the roof, and a split second after he banged on the roof, and I was at the beginning of applying the brakes, I felt my back wheel go boom. And I don't know why, it could have been anything, but I was convinced I'd run over him. And true enough, his equipment, he scrambled off the lorry, and his equipment had caught in some of the bar metal material we carried as spare for, I caught on one of them and pulled him under my back axle. Well, half our crew jumped off the left-hand side and got into the left-hand ditch, whilst I jumped off on the other, and I think my sergeant came round and jumped with me. And I was going to the ditch. This happened in a split second, but it takes an awful long time to explain. And I heard from the back, "Oh, you don't believe me here, don't leave me here." It was the quartermaster mechanist. And that picture about me running away from my, driving away from the sergeant in France came up most of my mind. I said, "I'm not bloody well doing it again." And in other words, I was getting a hold of my fear as well. Everyone was frightened on those things, but you can control it. And I was beginning to control it. The second aircraft came along, and he said, "You know, oh, don't leave me on the road today." And I'm a bit of a first aid and what have you. And I it's no use trying, you know, look to see what's the trouble. I just got a hold, straightened his legs were broken, and pulled him into the ditch. And I lay over him to protect him from strapping, as it were. My sergeant was there, I know, but I sort of took command at the time. With my shirt, I tore all strips off my shirt and I started binding his legs together. He was, one leg was broken in the shin, and was both broken, both bones were broken, and the other was broken, the thigh bone and the lower leg. I was sort of halfway through that when the medical orderly came along, because he was driving in the ambulance. And why he hadn't been, that was the finish of the area, by the way. Why he'd been such a long time was that the petrol lorry had been hit, and the two lads in there got badly burnt around the arms and the face, and attended them, got them into the ambulance, and he came along to say there was anyone else hurt, and he found it. Well, and he took over. And I shot him after it. I felt rather proud of myself. I got a hold and I was controlling. I was terribly scared, of course, but I got control of it. Of course, the next thing was that we had to get our injured, three men, to hospital. Benghazi.
Had you been able to deal with his two legs? I mean, you say they were both broken.
I tied his feet together, when the orderly came, so just a minute, he went back to the ambulance and got,
splints?
No. It's a whole body, it's canes tied together, and you tie them up, and the body is kept in a rigid condition from the chest down to his feet. I forget that there was a nickname we called, but that's not in here and there. Anyway, must get to Benghazi, our wounded wanted treatment. And when he got to Benghazi, it was a ghost town. Nothing. No one there. Now, there must have been, and then the sergeant made, he was a pretty good lad. He must have searched, but I can't remember him searching. He said, "Well, this is no good." Now, if you look at North Africa, coming from the Gulf of Sirte, the coast comes north, then Benghazi, and then it swings round to the east, and then slowly southeast, as it were. So from Benghazi, our quickest way is across the desert. But we had no navigation problem, equipment whatsoever, and we didn't. So he decided we'd stick the coast road, Barsi.
Is it a good road, the coast road?
Oh, yes. I would say that it would be, you take a poorly maintained back street, and it was for the, in that class, not probably as bad as that, but
wide enough to take two vehicles passing.
Yes, but of course it was the run on the cross on the other side. Yes, it was a two-way road, of course. Anyway, we got to Barsi, it was a ghost town as well. So, nothing to do but push on to Derna. Now, Derna, the coast road, when it's approaching, many miles before you get to Derna, but when you approach Derna, You're up on the top of a cliff. The dirt was down on sea level. And so we had to go down this zigzag road, which of course is the first leg going down. On your right is a sheer cliff, and on your left is a sheer drop down to the return leg of the zigzag. I've been trying to think how many zigzags, and there must have been three legs to the zigzag. Because when we got to the third one, i.e. that's the cliff on our right, on my right side, and the full drop on the left side, there was a bomb crater. Or perhaps it had been sabotaged by our rear guard action. I don't know which. The road nearest the cliff was okay for about 18 inches. Then it was a crater which sort of sloped away, a crater starting about, say, 6 inches deep, and gradually getting deeper and deeper, where it would be probably 3 foot, where it disappeared over the drop. What could you do? You couldn't get past. By the way, the zigzag wasn't a two-way road, it was a one-way road with passing places.
Your spirits must have dropped considerably at that point.
Oh, yes, indeed. In other words, my fear was coming back again to me. I was a marvellously brave fella I was, but it soon sort of put me down to proper standards again. The sergeant major decided that there was no purpose whatsoever in going back into the arms of Dewey. We may as well stop there and wait for him. And he decided that we would not put guns out to stop Jerry coming, because that would just get them back up, and he would reply, so okay, we're sitting ducks. Not if we could help it, not if the sergeant major could help it. A team was set up to collect the whatever rubbish and what have you that they had to build this crater up. In the meantime, we got the wounded on stretchers across the 8 inches road and the other side. We did eventually build up the crater. One of the latest crater, of course, is the 500 weight of the sergeant major's struggles. By the way, in the meantime, we were told to strip everything out, make the lorries and the thing as light as ever we can, and that was quite something for the from the workshop of it. Now, the door of the nearest to the driver's side was taken off the cab. For simple reason, a piece of rope from one of the tarpaulin sheets, that was purloined, and the driver of the truck was tied with this rope around the waist, so one end stretched to the other side of the crater and the other to this side of the crater, and the rest of the crew hung on to those ends. The thing being that if our road works failed and the truck toppled over the edge, we would hold the driver and keep him out. The truck got over. Wounded was put on board, and the sergeant said, off you go, lad, and find the CCS or our hospital, and wait for us on the main road through Derna. You've dropped your wounded. Come the next vehicle, the empty ammunition lorry. By the way, there's quite a number of crates that go in as well, it got over. That's 1, 2, 3, 4. Anyway, I was last. Now, we had stripped everything out, and by the way, that meant personal kits, bedding, everything. We were bare stripped. However, there was one thing on this. We did not go with the sergeant major. He had his brains, and he went as damn good he did. On the fitter's wagon, we carried 3.5 Beza guns, which of course were the spare core actual guns for the tank we had, you see, plus a rain gun and ammunition, plenty of ammunition for the .5, and half a case of magazine case with a grain. They would go with us, and they had to be taken across. And we said, never mind, that's it. My turn had come. Rope tied around his waist, engine going as quietly as possible, bottom rear, and I went, and being the heaviest lorry, it did creak a bit. I think in actual fact, looking back, it took us about 6.5 years to get across there, a matter of seconds, of course. That's how much I aged. But it was digging into my newfound bravery, I was getting even more scared. We all got across, loaded up, down in the Derna.
Did you throw the items that you took out of the trucks over the edge, or leave it?
We blocked the road further down, you see. No, we just left them there. We didn't even try to... Well, we didn't set fire or anything, because that would tell Jerry Myers away there's somebody there. No, we just left them on the road, and that's it. But anyway, we got down deserted, and there was the truck with the three wounded on. Transferred to the ambulance, and the sergeant major took the truck and he went to it there. And that seemed to be the end of our problems, really, apart from the fact that we had to get on to the next place, 40 miles further on, I think, at the time, to Rook. Well, surely Tobruk hasn't grown. That must be our place. And sure enough, when we went up the zigzagging side of the road, there was no problem. Oh, great. And we were beginning to get quite happy again. But the sergeant major, he had a working, an eager eye. Suddenly the column stopped. Oh, it was on the road. And he came running back to my first sergeant, and they had a powwow. Apparently, he'd seen a wisp of smoke over the brow of the hill. Anyway, the result of the powwow was that both NCO, an angle of 45 degrees in the same direction as going, so that by the time they got to the crest of the hill, they were about 200-300 yards away from where the road went over the hill. And incidentally, we watched them, and before they got to the skyline, they both went down in the valleys and they crawled up very easily. It was felt fashion, sort of. Obviously, something was on the other side. We watched them withdraw from the skyline and the chat, and my sergeant came back, and this was the message. There was two lorries, one had been on fire and one had been looted, just on the hill, on the same 10 yards down the other side, and about 30 yards for 2 hours. Two dead bodies lying between the, but down at the bottom of the hill was a jelly half track, plus a small equivalent to our 500-weight truck, which was pulling a small artillery piece, probably an anti-tank gun, in fact, and it was. With the spandrel guns of the half-track trained up the road. Now, as I was saying, if you notice the North African camp, contours course there, he comes straight across there, where we'd gone right round the corner, and that's how he got ahead of us. Well, how to deal with it? The sergeant major decided that the 3.5 beta guns would have to be used. Now, these are spares out of a tank, so we've got no tripod, nothing. So we decided it would be four men per gun. I.e. two holding them while one was feeding, the other one trying to fire. Which left only one man left, which was myself. So I was given the Bren gun, and we got up and got in position, and we were told, of course, that everything happened, and off that skyline as much as possible. A wave, we start firing. And well, I got into position there, and it was the wave and fell with it. I'm going to get a spark up around with the spark of this brain. Now, you will appreciate the fact, no doubt, that when you pull the cocking handle back, you can pull that back. You do it. But when you push that cocking handle forward, it's the spring that pushes the round up the spout. I pulled it back, and the round went there. And I pushed the handle forward, and it stopped. Sand in it. Or what else? I mean, absolutely. And up. There was my fear again. Ah! Anyway, by the way, I knew I had to there was no time to stick the gun down to it. I thought, well, I've got to flush it out. And what I've got, a water bottle full of water, that would do. And what I learned me lesson about conserving water in the desert. But I did flush it out. And my goodness, when the gun gets hot, hot urine right smack against the nose, and the brim gun isn't pleasant. I didn't learn that at the gunnery school, in other words. Anyway, in fact, I found, because the trace of all this, tell you, I found that my shots were getting on target very much easier than these other fellows, because the gun had gone all over the shot. Nevertheless, it was a good shot. And of course, it happened what we wanted. Jerry went into the desert, way down south. Great. Back to your lorries, pile on, get cracking. Up over the hill, and horror, there's the sergeant major in front. He stopped just down over the hill to see if those were two dead bodies. One wasn't, one was alive. You know, he imagined us, let's get back to this place, and there's a big lay off them, and rushed the gun at this other chap, this casualty, onto the ambulance, and we're just going to move off again. Well, they do say that you never hear the bullet that hits you. You certainly don't hear it if it happens to be an anti-tank shell that pushes it, that gets your engine, because suddenly my lorry just drew it to a halt, and the cab was filled with smoke, and there was flames coming up from the engine, and that's all I can sort of remember in. I'm terrified again. And the sergeant obviously run round, pulled me out of the smoking cab, and fire lifted me to the ambulance, which was on the move, and just bundled me in. And I knew no more then until we got to. Woke up and the senses came back to me in the CCS in Tobruk.
Presumably this was from the gun the Germans had pulled away. They stopped and trained it again.
It happened, yes. Oh, obviously. I mean, they were trained soldiers. They were magnificent soldiers, really. They weren't fighting with our machine gun fire. They were targets. They obviously deployed themselves. They didn't run away. We thought they had. They deployed themselves. But That was that story. Now, these days you get counselling and goodness knows what, psychiatric treatment and all that business. But and we're told that you can't say to a psychiatric patient, "Pull your socks up, pull yourself together." Those days you did, and I was told in no uncertain manner, "Pull yourself your socks together," and "Pull yourself together." And I was attached with about three other of my friends, who went elsewhere, you know, but about three other of my comrades to the unit belonging to the 10th Australian Infantry Division in the defence of Tobruk.
And by this time, presumably, Tobruk had been cut off.
Oh, yes, it was surrounded, yes.
And you got no treatment whatsoever. Just
no,
you came to.
I probably had, but I cannot remember that. You know, they probably work on me, but I know I learned something there, and incidentally, the Australians taught me something as well, and that is that if you're absolutely consumed with fear, get your mind working on something else. It's a very good advice. The reason I say the Australians told me that is because in our trenches, I was given a rifle the first time I trail right, except on the range during the troop trail of the bombing. And in the trenches there, he said, "Don't you what? Jerry was stopping us, you know, it wouldn't be as regular as one every half hour, but it seemed like that. It was umpteen times a day." And we said, "Look, what do you want to do?" He said, "If you see aircraft, say, over there, it's coming for you, turn around and find a spot in the air and throw up as much fire as you can out your rifle in the hopes that he runs into it," you know. And of course, there's about 6 or 7 of us going, you know, they tell me that apparently that did work sometimes, but I don't know. It didn't do anything for that for us, but it certainly taught me a big lesson. I do something and you're not frightened. Oh, you're frightened, but you forget about the food you're afraid. As regards the Australians, I couldn't have wished for better companions at all. They said, "Anybody that fights a war in them tin cans, tanks, okay by me." But, you know, we thought, well, anybody that's in agreement, okay. But I did go on 2 night patrol. I think we were just seeking information, really, because nothing happened.
Whereabouts in the line were you? Any idea?
I can't tell you. I think it was on the southern perimeter of Tobruk. This is only an impression, but I never saw it. So I wouldn't be very far off the Tobruk El Adem road. In fact, we wouldn't be so very far from the El Adem.
What were the defence positions like that you were in?
Oh, just temporary barbed wire and trenches that had been there, you see.
Were they just slip trenches or...?
No, on the system, slip trenches. Put it this way, they were a little bit more than slip trenches, as we know. They were, 4 foot deep or so. You know, you had to crouch down to, as it were, and if you were standing up, from your waist upwards, you were a target.
And how far the Germans were they to you?
Couldn't be more than a third of a mile away, something like that, you know.
And was this flat terrain? Were you looking straight at
them? It was our main trenches were behind the hold on, as we say, with those trenches on the top there, where you go forward to fire and what have you. It was more or less, you would appreciate the fact that Jelly hadn't got his full army there and what have you. Thank goodness, because we got organized. And as I say, my mind wasn't capable of retaining details. I wasn't going to say, "Oh, remember this, tell me grandchildren or whatever," you know. It wasn't like that at all. It really is a vague sort of thing.
Was it mined?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So you had to go through passages of tracks to get through.
In fact, there's something which I have forgot to tell you about, and that is that maintenance fitters and attack battalion were supposed to be mine experts. Of course, we never had mine detectors, it was the old bayonet, you know, finding out.
You've been trained in this?
We had been preliminary training, that's what we know, and also as regards when you find a mine, is it attached to another mine? And if it is it a pollinator or a pollinator? that did come. In fact, it came in very handy later on. But
what was the food situation? Because you're now in siege, aren't you?
Oh, yes.
What were you living on?
Dolly and biscuits, and incidentally, of course, there was an awful lot of. Because when we were at the gym, we knew about these kids. But it wasn't too bad compared with normal desert ration. And the Australians taught me one little tip, and that is have cheese and jam on the biscuits. I always say, and of course I've found out since that it's quite a normal dish to have jam and cheese on your meal. Yes, and